The FNRAD Snowboard Podcast is presented by Vans. Before I start the show this week, I just want to put a call out to our listeners around the world that Wired Snowboards is looking for international distributors in several key markets. Please reach out to Rob at WiredSnowboards.com if you think you'd be a good fit. Season 7 of FNRAD is sponsored by Wired Snowboards, the Boardroom Snowboard Shop, Anon Optics, Time Bomb Trading, the Canadian distributor of Stance Socks, Rumpel High Performance Blankets, and much, much more, and Tribute Board Shop in Nelson, BC. Stance Socks offer a feel-good fit that's a little more fun. Their latest collection of spring casuals offers an eclectic alternative to the everyday mundane with a fresh mix of color and creativity that lets you be you. Let Stance put a little extra pep in your step with a kaleidoscope of styles that are anything but boring. Stance's infinite technology creates socks they can guarantee for life. Their Feel 360 exclusive fiber treatment reacts to your body's temperature and eliminates odor-causing bacteria as it wicks away moisture to keep you feeling fresh and dry. Plus, you can express yourself with one of Stance's many collabs with some of your favorite things like Star Wars, Beavis and Butthead, and so much more. Go to stance.com to check out all of the goodness. Support also comes from Mount Seymour, Grouse Mountain, New Green Superfood Drink, Volcom Outerwear, and Intuition Heat Moldable Liners for Boots. Thanks to everybody who supports the show. Jeremy Jones became one of the most famous snowboarding pros, filming video parts with MacDog. He joined the original Forum 8. Then he was riding and filming for Burton, and now he's riding for Nitro and running a physical training facility called The Sect in Salt Lake City, where he helps out the current generation of pros with his 30-plus years of experience in the game. Jeremy is often referred to as Freestyle, Jibber, or Utah Jeremy Jones because there have been two pro snowboarder Jeremy Joneses for a very long time.
20-plus year careers on both the Jeremy Joneses. It's kind of, you know, and we've traded off, I guess, you know, through the years. It's I guess, gone up and down, like who's hot.
Who's headlining.
And, yeah, who's right, headlining. Right, that's right. The way to put it.
Right,
yeah.
right.
So it's fun, you know.
It's like always, when Ozzy and Motley Crue were,
yeah,
sure. were touring. Some days Ozzy would headline, some days Motley Crue would headline.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun, dude.
Well, it's I think we've, you know, for whatever and right or wrong over the years, we've probably both for sure helped each other out.
Oh yeah, right.
I mean, as much as you, if we're that one like super rider.
Yeah, sure.
And someone like looks at that and,
yeah,
you know, back then one day they were buying Rossignols and the next they were buying a Forum or a Burton. And then now they're buying a Jones split board. It's like, if they think we're the same person the whole time,
that's
doesn't
what you
matter.
Should do. You should do Jones snowboards. Oh my God.
I hit him so up about that.
No. I just mean you have your own Jones.
My own Jones.
So that you just continue this Jeremy Jones thing.
Where the street two- Jones. We'll be the Freestyle Jones board company.
That would be super sick, actually.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's room for it and there's room to do it with that kind of humor too. And,
yeah, yeah.
And both be on the same side, I think, in snowboarding now. So that's yeah. at least cool. You know, it's yeah. not a war anymore.
Yeah, see, here's the thing. If there's a lesson of this season for me, because I started with like the first interview I did was Donna, and that was back in the summer. And I've always been on the rider side of things. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of been pushing against the Donnas of the world, saying like, oh God, you guys don't get it. And they're pushing back saying, you guys don't get it. This isn't just like throw caution to the wind. Mm-hmm. We'll all be out of a job if you don't listen to the bean counters on this other side. Like there's certain stuff.
Yeah, no, there's a, you know, part of, you know, I look at where I'm at now and this is just jumping to now,
sure.
really.
Yeah.
Like you know, sitting on this almost three decades of a snowboard career and then a little bit of a corporate role to get kind of some structure and business and everything. And then look at it now. And that's really what it is. It's like, I can go do my thing somewhere else. I can practice my skills outside of snowboarding, maybe make more money doing that somewhere, or kind of come back to snowboarding, practice the skills I've learned, or not even come back, but stay in snowboarding and contribute that way. Like if you had something with the experience of someone that's been in it. And then now they're the ones laying the platform to listen to the kids coming in.
Oh, that's,
you know, brilliant. I'm through parts of Donna's cast, and, you know, she spoke to that about Jake, just back to the writers. And I look at, and that's all I've ever been about. It's been about, writer, and I never knew it. Forum was like that. Going to Burton was totally like that. And it was those were fun years because Burton wasn't perceived as that. And you listen to Donna talk about Jake's vision of listening to the writers, bringing them to the round tables. And he did that. He did that. He listened to everyone. He did ride the product, all of it.
Yeah.
You know, like
that's nice.
Rooms full of every single piece. And to move through that kind of, I mean, dude, there's so many SKUs. Like to move through all that in a season even is insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's just, you know, that's dope dedication. And then that's also his version of trying on the writer. Cause he knows what input from who went to what, you know,
mm-hmm.
He didn't always agree. And he let that thing happen. And hearing that about Craig and kind of where that spark to listen to that came from, I'd never heard that before. That was really cool. And it just put a new perspective on, my experience there. Cause me and Jake weren't super tight. We got along just fine.
Yeah. But, yeah.
You know, I was, in those years, a little more of a political voice, and it was, you know, baby rattlesnake style, like didn't know how to control my venom a bit and a little bit ignorant to what the venom can do, you know? So saying things that were polarizing for the sake of saying polarizing things, Jake didn't agree with all of them, but we never had beef about it. Always like, let me do the thing, even to the point of board graphics, you know, where, you know, the politics were out of that, but teasing Burton for being a corporate company.
Right.
That's the voice of snowboarding. Like,
right.
Yeah. You guys do Unink first year, sell 30,000, year two, sell 20,000, year three, want to bury it. Cause you're, and so then I'm like, I'm incorporated. Burton's trying to stuff me. So I throw this joke back at Burton on my own board graphic Burton's producing and creating the marketing message behind. And he runs that. Like that's pretty rad, dude.
Yes.
You know, like he's supporting, my fans, mm-hmm. the people that support me.
That's amazing.
And he did that across the board. So to see where that came from was pretty rad.
Yeah. I think I do this thing where I project my internal knowledge onto everyone, right? Like I learn about Craig's importance at Burton and I think, oh, well, everybody knew that already. But you're really getting to the heart of it, which is there's no Mr. Forum. You know what I mean? Like it wasn't like a guy who was calling the shots. There was no Mr. Burton. Like there wasn't he wasn't able to not even know the nuances around your board graphic. He just looked at it and goes, yeah, that's fine. That's cool. But if somebody said to him, hey, he's kind of taking the piss out of you, he'd be like, yeah, good. Okay. Like Burton's always been on the target of the cool kids.
Yeah.
Like they must've been very frustrated that they couldn't make something like the Burton 7 thing last. Or on ink, like that must have just pissed them off. That like, how come nobody wants to see Burton as this core company that has been in snowboarding forever, that's been at the top of their game, and that supports like some of the best riders in the world? Like, how come we're stuck being this kind of corporate weird thing?
Yeah, I don't know. You just get, I mean, kids are kids. You know, they start picking up on. They're testing things too. You know, they get caught in, you know, I see my kid now, she's 17 and she has to take on kind of the polarizing issues that the world presents her now. like now is the time she has to start trying it on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all snowboarding is. You bring these kids in, you show them something that, man, it's, I don't know what else you get to go hop on a team and like cruise the streets of Minnesota and get some crazy street experience, filming experience, or hop on a plane. Next thing you know, when you're 12 and you're lining up for the Olympics and you're like at this 22 foot pipe on the top of some glacier in the middle of Europe and you're 12 years old, you know,
it's, yeah.
I mean, it's unreal.
Yeah.
Unreal.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it with skateboarding, the young proteges, and then blowing up into the Danny Ways of the universe,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And Shaun White, the whole Shaun White thing. Like, snowboarding's got this whole gamut of experiences, but it really kind of boils down to that thing that hooks you in the beginning. Like, where were you when you started? Here in Utah?
Yeah, here in Farmington, Utah.
Yeah.
Just my neighborhood. I grew up skateboarding, so it was just kind of a means to deal with the cold. And
totally,
I don't really remember how I came up with the snowboard idea, but it was just a skate.
Yeah,
flipped the skateboard, took the trucks off.
Yeah,
did stirrup straps with a tire tube, and
yeah,
we would just bomb this goalie, and then I got like a black snow edge, and and it just kind of hooked, you know. And I was good at it, I guess, to the point of at least to keep going, you know, like
yeah.
The passion hooked in and it drew me in, and it was a experience with my friends, I think, more than anything. And they were all kind of giving it the same energy. And so it just came up that way. Like, I don't even know if it would have happened if it wasn't with the friends, you know?
Yeah. I think
I really don't.
That's the thing. It's like, yeah, I had a black snow edge too. Same deal. And even at that point, it was like, this is what I want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm excited for when it snows, because we're going to go and, you know, snowboard all over the place,
yeah.
Look for little things to hit, but like tiny stuff, like, like a golf course size.
And that thing. I'm like back to that now. And that's, I don't think I realized until, I mean, I had a thing just a month ago when we got our first snow here, and the way that I got drawn up there to go snowboard, I was by myself. And then I kept repeating that for a few weeks. Like, I would leave here my office at like 5 PM and drive up there and just get the last hour and dig out my spot, put the rail up. And this season taught me that I'm like, oh, okay, now I actually love snowboarding, because I'm doing it by myself because I want to. I'm mm-hmm. doing it because this is pulling at me. I don't have friends up here. This is just my mission, and it feels good. It feels good to hit this steel. And so when I, you know, that question was always there, like, what's your favorite thing in snowboarding? Like a powder turn, or is it riding a rail, or what's your favorite trick? And I never could answer it, because it was the experience with my friends that pulled me. Now I think I could maybe answer it, you know, and it's because I do. I'm like, yeah, I know the feeling of getting pulled for a solo mission, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was cool to know that after 30 years, I love snowboarding.
Yeah. For people that haven't been a pro rider, I don't think you're going to get to an experience where snowboarding is something that's like a job. You know what I mean? Everybody can understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even the most passionate, you know, worker has times where they realize, oh my God, this is just a job now.
You know?
It's not exciting. I'm a real first gear guy. Like, wow, we're going to do this cool thing. And then you look and you go, oh man, it's a lot of work. You know,
yeah,
it's a lot of work to get there.
No, it is. It's a grind.
When was your very first sponsorship thing? Like, did you do some sort of USASA series or traveling around?
No, I didn't do any of that. I moved straight into filming, really. So it was
rad.
Just local stuff here. Ben Pruce, actually. I met him. He was part of, you know, some East Coast racing stuff. That's actually how I met Jeremy Jones. It was all in the same 2 years, pretty much.
Yeah.
So I met Ben Pruse. I was sort of riding for this company called Yama. It was maybe out of Idaho. It was just some random thing. Wow. I just got a board,
yeah,
you know, and it was a sick board. But so I had, I think I got two boards, not really sponsored, but called it that. And then Ben Pruse came the next year. I was living with an old college roommate of his,
cool,
that moved out to do more school, Fritz. And so met Ben. Ben plugged me in, and then Revelation Snowboards started up in Surrey, Canada. So
yeah,
that was kind of my first in. Ben plugged it in, and then at the same time we had shot with JC Brady. So Brady Films here in Salt Lake, they were making some 16 mil snowboard films. We got in on those. That was kind of our plug. Whitey and Kingpin and Dogger MDP at the same time sort of started looking at Utah as like places to go. Yeah. So the same time their eyes were looking at us was when we had this sort of video breakout, me and JP both really in these early films, Tim Osler, Mitch Nilsson, a few other, you know, we were in these Brady films. And so they got glimpses of that. They started asking around, and, you know, a lot of people were talking about JP mostly. And so, Whitey came to town, and we were right in the film industry, ditched him on the first day. We like, dude, it was so much snow. We show up and we're like riding up the lift, and they had lagged a little bit. And Mikey was kind of curating the meetup, LeBlanc.
Yeah.
And we're like, dude, it's powder and these dudes are lagging. Like, we're watching chairs just go, you know? And we don't know a filming protocol yet. We're chomping. Like, yeah, we're chompers. If it's like, it's good, you know? That's our phase.
Totally, man.
So hop on the lift. We're halfway up it. And those dudes got on, I don't know, maybe 10 chairs behind, and it was kind of over this roll, and it was the highest point of the crest chair at Brighton. But it was so much snow, we were able to just jump. We just jumped. We're like, dude,
we're jumping.
We're out. We got to go ride. So we just like bodied off of these lifts.
Yeah.
And then just dipped into the trees and split the whole day. So ditched the full Whitey session. Like,
no way.
And that, I mean, I look at it now and it's so cool because snowboarding took over. Like, that snowboarding took over. We always looked at it as, oh man, sorry. Like, we were being dicks and not paying respect. And there's a level of that too. But at the same time, like, I don't know, you kind of came into our space and asked to be a part of our day, and you were late, and we were just like, dude, we kind of want to go.
Yeah.
We weren't in it yet. We didn't know, you know, that'd be a different story. And so I don't know.
No, it's a good story. It's
a little punk rock too. I mean, that's snowboarding, you know?
Yeah. I asked Johan about his reputation as someone who was hard to shoot with. And he was kind of like, what? No, those guys were hard to shoot with. Like, you're not at the top of a run just sitting there getting freezing cold. There's like a moment when you're ready to go.
Yeah.
And that moment, you can't manufacture that moment.
You can't.
It's either that you've got your camera with the film in it and pointed at me, or you don't.
But totally.
I don't have that. That's not a driving force behind the shit that I'm doing here.
Yeah. And that communication wasn't there a lot between filmer and writer. And there are a few crews that would do that. You know, we started open up that dialogue with Dogger and Whitey too. And Kearns especially, like, we're super open with Kearns. That plan was super clear.
Yeah.
Here's our relationship. Like, you know, we're not messing around. So I'm going to not mess up and you're going to not mess up. And it was intense, you know, and that was the sickest thing ever.
Yeah.
It was just good because you were on. And when you messed up, it was a mess up.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you just kept going.
That's a tight crew. Hey,
yeah, it was good. It was a tight crew.
Let's keep coming back to this same thing, because that's exactly what you're talking about with like a snowboarder running a company that mm-hmm. needs the bean counter stuff.
Yeah.
And you relegate the guy who's doing the money thing. It's like, okay, you do your job. We're going to do our job here.
Yeah.
And so Kearns was that.
He was the insulator.
He was the first filmer that had filmed, you know what I mean? That had been at a competition level of snowboarding.
Yeah. Right.
So, and once he got there, he was like, he had that ability to say to you guys, hey, don't do something lame. I'm don't make me come up there and do this.
Yeah.
It's too small.
Yeah.
Like, go do something that's impressive mm-hmm. because if I can do it, if I'm thinking about doing it, you guys are fucking up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not even that, you'd just be like, dude, I'll come do it.
Yeah.
Like I won't survive this, but I will. That came out of his mouth a few times. I will not survive this, but I will come and do it.
Yeah.
That I'm not afraid of.
Mm.
You know, and just that notion was, I responded to it well.
You know,
some people broke and
yeah.
I'm sure recovered now, hopefully, but it's
yeah. Yeah.
Those days were good for sure.
Yeah.
A lot to learn.
Yeah, let's talk about that team because that was, I mean, having talked about it a lot off mic and with buddies, and it's like the most expensive team in history of snowboarding.
Maybe. I mean, it wasn't that big, you know, if Burton even paying, you know, Burton was paying more for their team, I think, as a whole.
Mm.
I guess maybe individually. Maybe, but I don't know. I know what I was getting paid there, and that wasn't my heyday of money. It wasn't the forum days for sure.
Oh,
maybe the heyday of experience.
Yeah.
And like kind of that Hollywood just intensity.
Yeah.
I guess of fame sort of when you show up places and people were crying and, you know, that was wild. You know, for some were getting paid really good in those contracts. Others were just okay, you know. But it was the deal you made, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say the expense was more definitely the most expensive team marketed.
Yeah, I think that's probably what I'm talking about,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, probably.
And even, okay, when we're talking about the snowboarding being in it, like, so Forum seemed like an amazing partnership of Dogger and Raw going like we can market this. It's a marketing genius mm-hmm. thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then you guys weren't riding on the production boards. I remember being like, these boards aren't that great, especially the very first ones were real junk even.
We were riding on worse boards than the production for sure.
No.
Oh yeah. They were the worst.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I think Devin was riding still maybe option made stuff. I don't know. Maybe he wasn't.
Yeah, no, they would just blow up. I mean, the first run of boards, the code name of them were T-.
T-.
Because that's what it was. Like if you strapped in and you were like gravity was starting to feed you.
Yeah.
It was T-. Like you didn't know what was going to pop.
Oh no.
I mean, bases would just peel up and the timing of them was insane. That was the craziest part. It was consistently timed to the worst moment that thing could go wrong, like in the runway or the landing or whatever. Oh yeah. It was T-. So no, they were not good production.
Yeah.
You should be thankful you were on a production one.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And those weren't even that great.
Mm-mm. I went and rode my first pro model a few years back for a little real snow intro at the Rail Gardens.
Yeah.
And I dropped in on it the first like little drop just to see what it felt like. Fully fell, like high sided. The thing was like a 2x4.
Oh wow!
I couldn't believe I filmed a video part on that board and I was like, dude, this thing doesn't work at all.
Who was I talking to? Lance Pittman, I think, because he became the K2 clicker guy.
Oh, right.
And he was like, oh fuck, why did I do this to myself? Yeah. It's not working. And it's difficult, right? Like, so you're the first person to talk about this. Cause I asked Peter Line about the board quality and he was like, he could make it work.
Yeah, he was that person. We always tripped on him. He didn't He didn't fix lips. He didn't, he could ride anything. You know, he was like 4.5 pounds and could just, you know, pull the thing around.
Yeah.
He could ride anything. Nothing mattered.
So was it, were you allowed to talk about the board sucking when you guys were together? Like, or was that?
It was always, we were always like, dude, how do we get this things good? And they got better, you know, we got into some better factories and they worked out.
You know?
But they were good enough to like compete on an average level.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, until we introduced the slider from Rev, then we didn't really have anything on technology.
Yeah.
And then even still, it was just a mounting system, not like performance on the board. Yeah,
would you ride the sliders like you and JP ride the sliders?
Yeah, I mean, that was kind of my initiative. I brought those things, you know, from Rev to Forum and then from Forum to Burton. I did the first test, like late release pro model at Burton to introduce that and took the risk on that. And
they did the single track one.
They did the single track. We played with both, but ended on the single. And it was like the one on mine was like a little short track. So you could still run the two hole. You know, it was before we started doing the EST bindings, which was, you know, again, just messaging that I wanted a baseless binding from, because that's kind of how I grew up on bindings, homemade baseless bindings. And so,
wow.
I was kind of chasing that, so the EST was formed. It was a good system with the track. But that was kind of I took the risk, and then they went across the whole line over, I think it was like 3 or 4 years. And then
did the engineering on the track stuff?
I don't know ultimately, but I mean, the people I work with are like JG and Chris Doyle and those, you know, they were the ones that this all ultimately kind of where the craziness kind of gets accepted, you know, and they'll try it. And then me and Doyle worked on the toe cap a lot. You know, we were using hockey helmet chin things. And so he was always down to just listen. He did the spinner binding for me. He was all about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking with Trent Bush, I think. So he was doing Tech Nine. I think Tech Nine may have had the first toe cap stuff.
It was the same year. That was a little bit of a debate, like controversial, of
who was
me
doing
or
that?
Mark Frank.
Really?
Who did it? Who came up with it first? But, you know, really it was...
Oh, so it came out of Utah. That's the thing, is that you guys wanted something that just looked cleaner, pulled your boot back.
Yeah, I didn't even know he was up to it. I don't know that he knew I was up to
it. That's so bizarre.
We just sort of...
Both of you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the messaging in the industry became... this little who did it first, which was fine. Just let it ride. But now it's whatever.
There's a lot of that.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's important. It is.
There's a lot of that who did it first stuff, like Jake Tom on that, Jeff Grell, Louis Forno on the bindings. And I mean, we always have some new thing coming out.
And both sides. And if there's multiple sides to it, producing the thing, and everyone's paying attention, you're sort of all gonna, if you're already there in that development space, you're kind of gonna go the same way because you're experiencing the same holdbacks because the level rises.
Yeah.
You're watching talent or you are the talent.
Yeah.
And then you're crossing those skills and to the experience on, is the product holding up? Right.
Right.
And then the development process happens and, you know, I don't know. It's dope cycle, really.
Yeah.
But
I don't even know where we've landed on bindings. Is it something like what those unions are?
Those are nitros. Yeah. I mean, they're all over. I ride now is, I mean, that's like the team binding. So that, I would say that's your normal, kind of your basic.
So then you could use the toe strap like over the top of a boot.
Yeah, so the toe strap. Yeah, and some will do.
As a
lot of people aren't really running the toe cap anymore.
Right.
In terms of trends, I think.
Right.
It's more of just the old strap. So it looks a lot like that. So you can kind of put it on the toe.
Yeah, that's what's.
And then
that's
what the norm is now. Depending on what I'm doing, because the toe will pull my heel back.
Yeah.
So if I kind of want that heel pressed in for carving,
yep,
that's kind of, I can do it from my toe rather than over the top.
Yeah, totally.
And it's more comfortable, but it keeps my heel in.
Yeah.
And then like in the street, I can kind of go either way because I run straps a little looser and then depending on the thing. So
interesting. Who knows,
I'm all over the place for sure.
I've always felt like in the hierarchy of importance, it's boots first anyways.
Yeah, I would agree.
It's 100% boots. Because there's no way of enjoying your day if you have crappy boots.
Yeah, I agree.
But you could have crappy bindings with good boots and they do just okay.
You can figure it out.
Yeah. And yeah. Same with the board, right? A board's important, but it's not as important as your boots still.
No, yeah. I think boots are number one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who have you ridden for over the years for boot wise? Like who would have been the back in the Rev days?
Yeah, so Rev, I mean, we were all over with boots kind of for a minute. It was Blacks. You remember that?
I do, yeah. European guys. Yeah, yeah.
Blacks, North Wave for a minute. DC, right when they started, I was in on that. And then Forum Boots.
Yeah.
Burton Boots forever. And then now Nitro, Vans. I kind of mix it up now. I'm riding the Vans Linerless right now. They're sick.
Oh, they're so sick. I've got a pair of those.
Yeah, too. I like them and they're fun. Just they're, I don't know. They treat my injuries better, I guess. Mm. So I can kind of get away with a little, but I can't ride super aggressive.
It's, yeah, of course.
It's too painful, but
yeah,
but they're
wow,
good,
man.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's a good gamut of boots. Like,
yeah, they're, and I mean, I go to work on my boots. Like you said, they're important. Yeah. Last year I spent, I had hand massaging boots at night and like putting the liners in the oven, yeah, soaking them in leather seal, putting them on, heating them up, moving them around. Like I put in hours on these things just to get them to perform, you know, and then the cold hits them and then they're not doing what I want. So I'm like back at the studio grinding on the boots, you know?
Yeah.
So I get, yeah, I'm definitely that with boots.
Yeah. 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 I lucked out in 93. The guys from Intuition are in Vancouver.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Those are good lines.
Yeah. So the guy came in and gave us the spiel and it's so fun when you hear like an inventor, you know, talking about why this is good or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I went from almost having to quit. Like I was riding with an ankle brace inside.
Yeah.
North Wave liner when they were N boots. Like, so before
They
were like,
N boots. I rode those.
Yeah. Before they were comfortable being North Wave. And I just thought, okay, this is going to be pain the rest of my life.
Mm.
And then I got those Intuition liners and I literally can't ride anything else now. Yeah, it just molds to your feet, dude.
Yeah. I mean, those are the ones I put in the oven because you can just shrink wrap them and it's amazing.
Yeah. They're perfect.
Yeah.
They're really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because the development of the slider was happening basically in Vancouver. Like Surrey is a city on the outskirts of Vancouver.
Yeah.
And I remember the first generation of it pulled out. So they put like a whole bunch of layers of fiberglass and they were really working on that to make sure that the boards weren't heavy, but they had these slider things.
Yeah. It was David Partridge. He was just New Zealand crazy guy.
Really?
Just inventor. He brought that from windsurfing is what he told us.
Mm, that makes sense.
Yeah. Him and his wife, Janice, they were dope there. I haven't talked to him in forever, but
how do you get hooked up with those guys?
That was Ben Pruce. I don't know how he had that line, but it had something to do with their racing background back east, you know, the racing boards and the like 45-45s, yeah. You know.
Did you ever do that?
A few times, yeah. Yeah. It's actually pretty fun. Like those things rail and it's a different experience for sure.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, nothing more than a few runs, really.
Yeah, yeah. I used to try and go hard boots once a year just to get that edging again. Because you come back to your freestyle board and you're like, really know what it feels like to rely on your edge.
Yeah,
and ride the board the way that
Never you, thought of that.
Oh, it was just for fun and probably because I'm a bit of a kook. But yeah, it's
hard boots just... I can't think of anything more painful.
So. Yeah, you know what? It wasn't even hard boots. It was like just ride a board that's super narrow with 45 degree angles.
Got you. Yeah, I could get down with that.
Yeah, it's pretty fun, actually. Yeah. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, the edge work like that is good. Yeah. You put a different pressure on with those angles, too.
It's so funny. I'm talking with Jeremy Jones. I'm really, like, just my inner kook comes out. I'm like, I love snowboarding so much. I like to try all different crazy, dumb
Sick.
Stuff.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, I'm the same. I don't get too crazy with boards, but
yeah,
everything else. Boards, I'm pretty traditional.
Yeah.
I try, but nothing. I just don't understand how the other stuff works. Yeah. I mean, a powder board works, but I feel like stance set in the right spot on just about anything on the right pitch, powder rips.
Yep, absolutely.
Anything, a sheet of plywood.
I mean, you can do the pow surfing thing with no bindings.
Yeah. I mean, it like tacks up, it's controllable. And so.
Yeah, man.
You know, in terms of just riding a board on a mountain, just a, you know, like a twin, like a directional twin
that yeah.
is fit right for you, the flex you want, the thing rides in powder. Nowadays, yeah. you know, they're just so good.
Yeah, yeah.
So I get pretty simple on the boards, but.
Well, the rev boards actually rode really well. So
they were really smooth well.
And they were, yeah, like if you.
Yeah, they were engineered like. Very thoughtfully on the side cuts. Those things were insane.
Yeah.
Like that was like a race board, but yeah. a freestyle board.
Yeah.
Put
yeah.
that thing on an edge and it would just.
It was the early cap stuff too.
Early
right?
cap, yeah. yeah. And I used to think it was that, but I really just think it was the mix of that side cut and the way those blends, because they were really ahead of their time on the blends, like yeah. the way you'd blend into the tip and the tail, those were all pretty harsh yeah. leading into that. And then they learned how to draw it out and make that running length of the edge a little shorter, but then still get that like long length bite.
Yeah.
And they found that through that side cut arc. And I don't know, they were smart that way. For
they had,
sure.
They had a lot going for them. They had an incredible team with you, JP, JF was on there at that
yeah.
time.
Yeah, man, for sure.
I love seeing your face light up at the mention of
JF. Oh, dude, animal, that dude, like, I mean, he was just a part of it. You know, that whole phase was, that was our time. That was our timeline to like hop on board and be a part of this industry. And he was part of that with us. And so, yeah, he's just a good memory in snowboarding for sure. And just one of the best people, you know?
Totally. Yeah. So. I met him when he drove out from Quebec. He stopped in Vancouver at the local snowboard shops. He was living out of his car, I believe.
Yeah, for sure. The yeah. little gray, what was that thing? A gray, yeah. Listening to tapes of Metallica for sure. Dude is a legend.
Yeah, and so whenever I would see him, it would just be like a really good time. He was always having fun.
Always.
Yeah.
Still probably is, yep. I'm
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Now bindings and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's good. Good ones too. Yeah, it's good to see all these like Daryl kids that are still in snowboarding and using their brains and seeing how beautiful they are and you know what they've thought about and the experiences they learn come out in their products. Like really cool. It's cool for me. I see snowboarding in a different light now, just having that experience. It's yeah. something special for sure.
Yeah. Well, what we've been talking about the whole way through, just this feel like we're standing on a precipice here where the future Burton, which is the biggest company in snowboarding, is kind of hanging in the balance.
I'm really not worried about Burton. I think they can, you know, the experience that I had years there, as frustrating as parts of it would be, because it seemed to be on these cycles. You'd go through these, you know, I mentioned it with the Uninked stuff. You sort of had these 3-year runs of things. These, we're going to hit something really hard. You know, you hit something really hard with marketing, you get these blasts always. It's tried and true, right?
Yeah.
So but then to do it over and over again, kind of the same way, it gets difficult. People catch on to it. They don't buy in, right? Yeah.
There's Seven, then there's Uninked, the forum stuff, like the program,
mm-hmm.
and Family Tree. But Family Tree seems like the one where it's kind of hit, and it's sort of staying.
Yeah, because it has a timeless like message to it.
The bummer is that was JG and Terrier.
Yeah, but it'll still be around. I mean, they already put that legacy to it. You know, it's going to remain, and it's just a matter of the people at Burton, you know, sharing their voice to keep it around. It's important Burton does well. It is. They have too much of the market. There's no reason to come in and, like, with messaging or marketing or just, like, money to try and, like, swoop that up and take it away from them. Just let's just let it ride. If someone rises to the point of taking over or taking that market share percentage over Burton, then it happens. But it happens because we're all supporting each other. Like, Burton does well, we all do well. If Burton's in a good market, and people are buying, then they're buying other stuff too, because they can't afford Burton. They're going to go maybe buy a Public, or they look at Burton at snowboarding and then they're all, oh, I like this thing. This kind of feels not totally my thing. They talk about the X Games a lot, and they sort of, you know, they look at that. They kind of play with the Olympics. I like this little shop kind of vibe. And what about that Public board I saw, you know? And then you sort the customer kind of makes their own tune, but we need to pull that customer somehow. And those little brands that they may end up supporting aren't going to pull them in. Yeah. They'll pull handfuls here and there with local communities, but Burton's important on many ways. And if their product's selling and people are buying it, then they're going to be buying other product.
There's a lot of wisdom in what you just said, for sure.
They spend a lot of money on riders, you know, and they bring them to the things. The product is rider driven. It actually is rider driven.
Right.
So, and I, you know, I have a really small deal with Nitro, so I'm not here to big up Burton, but it's important.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
It's part of my brand. It's part of my legacy. And for right or wrong, the thing's got to survive, and you got to keep those wheels on it.
Right.
And we should all support it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've
through other brands. Right?
Yeah. I'm lucky enough to have a small manufacturer in my city.
Yeah.
That's got a legacy of making epic boards. You know what I mean? So I can go and build a board for the local mountains that is designed right where we ride. It's super sick.
Why wouldn't you? And Burton was about that too. And all these other brands should be too, like, support that. Why not?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Why not?
So what's the move from Rev to what happens next? I think I remember Rev kind of imploding.
Yeah, that's really what happened. It just sort of, it was just done. You know, for, I don't know, series of reasons, probably just maybe can't meet capital, too much attention too quick.
Were there two owners? Maybe there was a bit of a battle.
Maybe between some owner two battles. Yeah. I didn't know a ton about that, but
yeah,
it went away. And then I just mowed lawns for 2 years and just kind of.
Wait, you took 2 years off of snowboarding?
Well, yeah, I couldn't find anything. And that was when, you know, I couldn't get, JP had just started, who did he click into there? Well, that was pretty much to Forum from Rev.
Yeah.
So he sort of had this year of, he just went off to MDP, like, to start filming. And I was hurt that year, and that Rev thing ended. So I just kind of chilled.
Were you thinking maybe go to school or something?
No, not at all. Not, I mean, for sure not. It was just work and then heal and try. And so then spent the next year getting back on the board, shuffling through sponsors, not having much to show, kind of reaching out, Joyride, Type A, kind of landed on Type A for a minute, and then ended up getting into the Forum.
Type A camp. Had a sick team, hey?
Boards were good. Boards were sick.
Yeah.
And graphics were sick.
Yeah.
That was real, really pretty short, but happened. I don't even think I met anyone there.
Even Joyride.
Just on for a sec.
How do you get a Joyride board through Ken, or was it?
Oh, how did I get that? Jeez, I can't even remember how I ended up with that one. That was actually a sick board, though. It was a, who was that board? Mackinnon. Was it Yoni Mackinnon?
Yoni Mackinnon.
Yeah,
that was a nice board.
It's dope.
Yeah, tail end of Joyride. They were same thing, just imploding a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just, it, you know, I don't know. I think it was just everyone, don't know. Everyone thinks they can just sell a snowboard company for billions of dollars, and that becomes the goal. And what snowboard company has ever sold for a lot of money? None.
Yeah.
None. Yeah. Like, there's no, it doesn't happen. Like, just build the business so you can run the thing and have like a dope thing. You know, you can make money, you can do dope, like, yeah, things, trips, have a rad product. And nowadays you can actually do that. You can run a dope brand. You don't need 90 sales reps, you know, that you have to pay and
yeah, that
sell
whole
your
thing,
product.
COVID and just kiboshed like trade shows and
yeah,
all that stuff.
And it's, I mean, the system was tried and true and it was solid and reliable, but it's so different now. You just have to navigate it different. And everyone can do it different ways for sure. Hybrids of both or turning, you know, direct to consumer only or whatever. But you can run a brand pretty lean, I think, now. And
yeah,
I don't know. We'll see. I think there's room. Yeah. I think snowboarders are starting to, I don't know, bring it back. Have snowboarding be more about snowboarding.
I feel like there's been pockets of that through every single era. There's been these guys that, you know, either build their own boards or, you know, Nick from Sam and Arms making mitts and selling them to local kids at Seymour, but creating this culture of like snowboarding's fucking awesome. You know what I mean?
Just hustle to keep doing it and stay in it, you know, and keep the intent pure. You know?
Yeah. So when do you join Forum? It's kind of happening. Like Devin and JP were on for a year, maybe before the whole eight were.
Yeah, a year. Yeah. And then the whole eight came on 96, 97.
It's that early, there. Hey? Yeah. Wow.
And then 2003 was when I went to Burton. So
yeah,
6, 7 years. It was 7 years pretty much in contract terms. So
yeah.
And then,
Contracts kind of go from, you know, small to big over that time, or was it?
It went from not big, but it went from unpromised to where really it went to what I should have been getting it for him. So I'd negotiated some deals with them and some boot deals and things like that. And that's really where it ended up falling through, is for 3 years when you come through, but you don't get your share, you know, cut in. And that's what it was. And Burton was, that's all I was asking with Burton. I just said, this is what I should be making based on these promises that I fulfilled. So pay me that and let's see what the deal looks like. But no, it wasn't a lot. Like, I mean, I ended up probably doubling that in time, you know, at my highest pay. So
sure. Yeah.
But incentives are always good and people were buying a lot of boards then. So you made extra cash there and that was dope. And then, you know, we were in the magazines all the time. Burton was always pushing their photos and they had photographers. They had that same formula that we did at Forum. Just show up with the media and put it on their table and they'll run it because it's good and you made it easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so Burton was that same kind of support for their riders and they paid for it too, just like you do.
So did you go from, okay, like, are you more of a lone wolf kind of guy? Like what you would have probably become at Burton, like you're not crewing up with whoever's on Burton there versus those 6 years or seven contracts on Forum where you guys kind of became a phenomenon, this group of you, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and there was intention behind that. And so those that were all in on that were all in on that. And those that were all in on it, but ultimately not, once it kind of, when you're halfway through, there was a couple in that original kind of group. And that just starts to kind of weird things out. And so the first couple movies were real focused. It was like, we're all in on this. And
what was the first one? Resistance?
Resistance.
Yeah.
And then True Life.
And True Life. Right.
Those were just everyone
so
all in.
So the whole team is together on this project. You guys are going on trips outside of snowboarding together, like surf trips and things.
Yeah.
And it sounded like what happened from Kearns was that MacDog was realizing, well, I was already making all this money on my videos.
Like, now I'm sharing it.
Yeah, now I'm sharing it with these guys. Like, what the hell is this?
Yeah, and then not get, you know, and the whole business side of the thing that went sideways was just that. Like I explained on my personal experience, it was, you know, quite a few things of just promises not being met when obligations were.
Yeah.
Right. So I performed, pay up.
Yeah.
Sorry, you know, everything's in phantom this, phantom that, you know, it's just this tone of mystery. And
oh, no.
Ultimately, you know, a lot of people didn't get paid. A lot of people did.
Yeah.
But you know, relationships really just that, pull it out. Yeah.
So that's the bean counters thing too, right? So MacDog's one of these guys who always ran his own business. He didn't have like an investor guy.
Yeah, he's a creative, you know?
Yeah. And he was able to, he just had such a good formula with follow the progression and really you don't put anything in because someone's paying, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's a fluid formula. And so to operate inside like a structure and a budget and it makes it difficult, I think.
Yeah.
You know, cause it's, yeah, he didn't write those plans down. The plan wasn't like mapped out for the year. The plan was like you said, follow the progression. And so he followed the progression from a film component, from a camera component, from a technical component, from a creative component.
Right.
And then all of that was pointing at the writer and he was following it.
Yeah.
And then that writer went to the next writer and he was a natural at it. I don't think it was a thought process. It just was his thing.
Right. And then he comes into Forum and it's a formula.
It's a formula.
And
but it's his formula, really. It's his formula that they put down on paper. And then you're looking at your same game and it's, you're like, I already do this.
Right.
You know,
he's just sharing this epic, you know, formula that's been so, you know, it's been so successful over the years and he's sharing it now with somebody that's maybe not got the integrity that he had.
Yeah.
Essentially.
And, yeah. And I mean, and really ultimately didn't, you know, the people there didn't. You know, it was about them. It was about the party. It was about the, you know, just showing it off and being loud and having that thing. And it worked. It worked for the marketing components to it for sure.
Right.
But there was a line and it just falls apart unless everyone's in line.
That's
it. Yeah, a lot of people involved.
I heard about that last bit with, you know, so then, you know, the Forum video wasn't going to be made by MacDog. And there were the two projects.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was so divided.
Yeah. It was just a mess. So.
Yeah.
And I left at that point. So it was,
that's when you left. So you left before the whole thing fell apart.
Right in there. Yeah. And I could see it, you know, and I tried to get JP to come with me, but he really had a good deal. He had a good deal at Forum.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. He was, you know, he was one of the ones that had a really good deal.
Well, Kearns talked about they negotiated. Well, you did this too, right? Like negotiating your contract. No, sorry. I'm getting mixed up. I think they flew JP to Burlington.
So, well, me and JP went together
to
Burlington.
Okay. So I'm not that mixed up.
No, you're right on. So we went. Yeah, I talked him into like considering it.
Yeah.
And because we were both looking at Forum at the same, through the same lens, you know, and he actually was in between the deal. We were both coming up on these deals and I had just had a different past with Rawl and with Forum than JP. His deals were getting met. Mine weren't.
Mm.
And, yeah, so I was just like, come check it out. These guys are just going to do this to you eventually. So just come listen. And so we did. It was all like secret. You know, they kind of black card us there and then walk us into the office and close the blinds, you know, fully. It was pretty funny. And
that's amazing.
People were creeping and then rumors definitely started because a couple people see, you know, and kind of make mention, but it all stayed pretty low key.
And JP had like a contract hanging in the balance, right? And they're like, you know,
yeah,
oh, you can't talk right now. He's in Burlington. And they're like, what? He's where now?
Yeah, maybe. I don't think that close. I think it was all within, you know, a month's time. Okay. So it wasn't like, hey, we're waiting for you to sign this today. Where are you?
But right.
As far as I recall. He ultimately not did it.
Yeah, you took the deal.
I took the deal.
And you guys weren't like a package deal? Like it's like...
No, it's never... Yeah, it's always been solid. And
I saw you guys riding together last week or something.
Yeah, no, we skated last night together. And
that's
we'll probably
so dope.
Skate again pretty close to after we're done recording this.
That's super sick, man. It made me happy
to
see you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah. Riding, you know... The most famous rail spot, the two most famous rail riders, you know.
Well, thanks. Great. It's, I mean, those moments to me are nowadays as good as they can get, you know. It's,
yeah.
The two of us have had a different kind of, you know, battle in our own lives for the last 5 years. And so we've just nurtured each other through it the ways that we could. And we've been on different kind of paces with it. So we've been able to, you know, offer that help. And
yeah,
and it's cool. I don't have that with anyone else.
Yeah. Your friendship started when you guys school or something?
Eighth grade.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. That's nuts.
Maybe seventh grade.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's been forever.
Yeah.
So, yeah, my longest friend for sure.
Yeah, and growing up together, knowing each other in those like formative years. That's super rare.
Yeah, and then, you know, also going through, you know, kind of life-changing trauma, both of us really in the same age bracket in life. Kind of both at the end of our careers, so to speak, if they didn't end 10 years prior.
Right.
I can't believe they've gone as long as they have, you know, but you know what I mean? Like
absolutely.
Our voice and our kind of actions in snowbboarding took a rest for a minute to deal, you know? But yeah, I've been back 2 years kind of poking at it, and man, snowboarding it's insane. What a group.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what happened with your leg? Like, I remember you broke your leg, and I remember it was a big deal.
Yeah, so I was out of the sponsor. We had all the Burton stuff had wrapped up. That was 2014. This was 2017. And I'd been, you know, poking at different brands and doing some different kind of work, just hustling, trying to kind of stay in snowboarding, figure out what that looked like. But really snowboarding all the time still, that was kind of the focus. And so just paying myself, you know, me and my wife saved money over the years. And for that reason, the savings for emergencies. And that's basically what was happening. And
Damn, so you were in like an emergency mode.
Pretty much. I mean, I just didn't have, I wanted to still be in snowboarding. So I was trying to find the lane to switch from being a snowboarder and then to something else.
Yeah.
And, you know, in 2014, I just couldn't see it. But I could see clearly what being a pro snowboarder was. So to chase that made sense to me, even though nothing was consistent, you know, from a financial perspective, I was able to like make money and do little hustles and get things done. I knew the space. And so then I get hurt in an avalanche snowboarding, break both of my legs. And it's, you know, I got health insurance a week before that. I was right in this like buying period. So it locked in, but I ended up getting helied out. you know, tib fib fully exploded, right leg, especially rods, plates. And just told that I wasn't snowboarding ever, right? Like that won't happen anymore. And so now I'm at this like real pivotal point, already like started to spend, you know, what would be our retirement, you know, 'cause that's what we were putting it away for, and taking care of the kids and paying for them. And then I'm just like, dude, this is insane. And so it was stressful, but it was what it was. just move through it. And then, yeah, my buddy did. I woke up like at home. It was what, the second day after I got back from the hospital, and I, after all the surgery and everything, it was 2.5 days in the hospital, and then I was home. So just a few days after the accident, within a week, and I wake up one morning, and I had asked my friends not to do any sort of fundraiser thing because they knew I was nervous of that because they're close to me. And I was just like, fuck, how am I going to pay for this? This is like, even with insurance covering it, it's not an all-in deal, you know, and helis are expensive. And so I was looking at a hefty bill still, and even my portion, and not making money. So I'm stressed, but I wake up and my friend Brock had done, the dude that saved me in the Abbey, basically, he started a GoFundMe thing. Yeah. And I was a little bit bummed, you know, but when I saw it, I just didn't know. I couldn't really be bummed anymore, because within like me learning about it and then clicking on the thing, it was like, I don't know, 12 hours open, and I don't know what the ask, I don't remember if there was a cap on the ask of what, maybe 30 grand or something like that.
Wow.
It was like, yeah, hey, if we can get this much money, then, and it was like already past that.
Jeez, dude.
And then, so it ended up at like 60 grand. Oh my. And I was like, and it did that in, I mean, it got to its high number. I mean, things trickled for a while, but
yeah,
it got to its number in 24 hours.
Yeah.
And it was like, and then the comments, there was like hundreds of them. And my wife would come down and just start reading them to me. And I was just like, it was just insane.
Yeah. You're laid up in bed, two broken legs.
And people are saying the stuff to you like, I mean, I've said this before, but it's like, the, if I was dead,
yeah,
I hope this is what,
right,
the impact I made. And you're hearing that stuff, and then, you know, I'm seeing, I don't know who, some 12-year-old kid like kicking $5 in, and yeah, you're just like, oh, dude, take this away from, I can't see this anymore.
Yeah.
Just sobbing, you know, and
yeah,
I had to tell my wife just to archive it, and I was going to have to look another day because it just was, it's just intense. And it's, I kept heavy, trying, you know,
it's,
and
heavy.
I just would chisel at it. And so anytime I get these kind of opportunities, it's just to, you know, I like to say thanks. And you mentioned it when you came in, you know, you contributed to that. And and that was a snowboard industry perspective game changer for me. It pulled the culture back to my soul,
yes,
and my heart, and I was just able to see it and like, dude, this is, I want to be here. Want to be here.
Yeah. I mean, holy shit, that's heavy, right?
Yeah, like it is for sure.
Because we talked a little off mic on the way in here, and you spoke of a struggle of like this dream job that we all see from the outside is like, you get to do this dream job at some point is not a dream job, right? Like,
yeah,
it can be work. It can be stress. It can be a lot of pressure too, to do things that you're like, nah, fuck, I'm risking my life here. Right.
Yeah.
I think from the other side of that GoFundMe, it was like, here's a guy who's dedicated his life to entertaining us with amazing snowboarding. And he's out there doing snowboarding and something tragic happens. And I think it was the avalanche, the broken legs, that you're completely laid up. Like, it just was like, there was no option for me. I was like, holy shit, I can't know that this happened and go about my day,
yeah,
without contributing to making sure that this guy, at least his hospital bills are taken care of. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And that's what it did, man. Like, it, you know, I was surprised. I took, at least from a visible perspective and what I was able to read, very little shit for people that have a different opinion about a GoFundMe or something. And that alone impressed me in snowboarding.
Yeah.
And the people that are involved, I was just like, oh, we've grown past that. We've either grown past it and just, we've either grown or I don't know. That's all it is. We've grown enough that we're like, look, these are our people. Yeah. And a buck matters. Like right. $1 matters.
Right.
You know, it actually does. And that was a cool perspective for me. I looked at those GoFundMes the same as anyone that's not into them. It was a weird time. It was like right on the fence of those things being kind of accepted or not. And
right, right.
And that was why I'm like, no, do not do that.
There's an embarrassment.
I'll figure
to
this
it.
Out, you know, for sure don't.
And when I sent that shit, that was like my love for the snowboard industry and the people that are in it that risk their lives and that have done stuff throughout that shows that they're the real deal. You know, you're the real deal. So,
well, and I had to really try that on and acknowledge that, or else it would have ate me up. I had to just be like, look, this is everyone saying it's okay. It's the only way I can look at this and like,
yeah,
and not just feel like an imposter, you know, so to speak. And so it was a big moment. It changed. I mean, it changed everything. It changed the whole way I've ever looked at snowboarding. I mean, a lot of things are the same, right? A lot of things are, I believe in product. I believe in filming. I believe in team. I believe in intensity. I believe in like going about things that way, video parts and just like the production of them and the thought process and that effort. And, you know, those things are the same, but believing in the culture is kind of new in a way. I mean, I've always been a part of the culture and lived the culture and loved the culture, but I don't know that I've ever looked at it in that lens where it's like, this is actually believe in this. I want this to like
right.
be what it is and be strong and powerful in what it is. Not bend to all this other stuff. Like, let's be snowboarding and let's be the voice. Let's let the kids be the voice. Let's let the youth be the voice. And let's, now that the olds are up here in a place that where we were once young, like
yeah.
we have that in snowboarding now. It's kind of the first time where pros are, there's more pros running companies at the very top now than ever before.
Yeah.
And I think that's an opportunity for us in snowboarding to speak our language, you know, and to support our people. And just, I think it's going to be an amazing thing. I'm looking forward to see, you know, what we do with it.
Yeah. You were saying that the breaking your legs was the first time you really took a break from like looking at the future, like focusing on, you know, new product, new designs next year, and realized, oh shit, there's all these people who've been watching me this whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. Last 5 years have just been, it's nuts. You know, the 45-year-old kids that walk up to me and explain to me the impact of those forum days and those experiences and what that had, and hearing those messages on Instagram. And, you know, as people get older, they get more comfortable to reach out, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you hear these messages, and it's, I had to look at it. I'm like, what was it that we were even doing that, you know, made this big of an impact? I mean, I knew we were filming video parts. I knew we were spearheading movements like the Jib Fest, and we were progressive in contest structure and changing the tone and then team videos and kind of bringing that to snowboarding and putting focus to it. And so we were doing things that were, I mean, I recognized that we were at the front of something.
Right.
But we were at the front of it.
Yeah,
when we were not seeing
what
was happening, you know.
Let's talk about the Jib Fest. How did that come about? That's just
just like we, you know, the same way I came up wasn't contests. And so we were getting pulled into contests because you kind of had to do them a little bit at the time. So, you know, first X Games were there in Crested Butte. And it's like me and JP are last, you know, second place, second to last place and last place. And that sort of like becomes our theme in these contests is like, okay, let's see either who can get last place or who can beat the other. And so we were like, we were competing, you know, generally for 16th and 17th, because that's usually about the number of people that were invited. And
Otterstrom said he saw you guys at an X Games roll up, look at the thing, go, nope, and jet out. He's like, wow.
All the time.
I wish I could do that.
All the time. I mean, there was few contests so that I like, showed up to and took a practice like, run.
I went to X Games.
Yeah, I showed up.
I did my thing.
Yeah. Well, and we were in on like celebrity invites too. So they had like these couple celebrity. And so we would get invited based off our video parts. And we're like, dude, this is like, we don't even know how to do this. What, like even a rail on those things. We're like, this is terrifying. This thing is no way. I'm not touching that thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. I'll do a 360 over that hard jump, but that's it.
Yeah.
And they were like 40-foot jumps then. They weren't even that big, but you know, our space was just not that. And so, it came about that Nixon was supportive, wanted to do something, you know, cool and fun. And just through discussion with those minds, you know, Chad, Gunny, me, Downing, JP, we're just rapping, like, what do we do? And let's do a contest that is invite only. And we're, and like, we all judge it.
How does Simone get his invite? Do you remember?
Johnson.
Yeah.
Johnson plugged him in. There was like a stepchild tie.
Sick.
Somehow. Maybe Kearns.
Yeah.
Was right. I can't remember, but it was through Johnson. Someone was communicating with Johnson.
Yeah.
And yeah, there's this rail kid and he won some event maybe up there. And so we just invited him kind of on like a whim. And we were like pulled him in and immediately like we're going to go to haze mode. And then he just turned it on and we're just like, all right, you're in.
Yeah.
Because you're going. So yeah, it's just sort of happenstance. It's just sort of,
and he won the whole thing. Did he win the whole thing? The first one?
Yeah, he won the first one and then Duffacy, I think got best trick. And I think he actually got second place or something too in the first or
holy shit.
Or no, I won the, and then I won the second one.
Yeah.
Or Simone got, first.
And those would come out as videos too, right? Like that was kind of a part and parcel of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was a smart move.
Yeah, we did three of those and they did really well. Those were fun.
Yeah.
And those were came out, you know, alongside of those forum projects. And MacDog was doing a project on the side those years too. So the later years. So three movies coming out of MDP camp, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, completely nuts. Yeah,
pretty nuts.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of that.
Yeah. You touched on the idea of, you know, the stress around a long snowboarding career.
Yeah.
And towards the end being like, do I do this? Do I not? Like, did you ever have to do some therapy? Did you ever, you know, like mindset stuff?
Yeah. I mean, that's, I've done a lot of it myself. I've done, you know, quite a bit of therapy with help as well. But less about like the whole pro trend, like being pro, not so much there. It was more after the accident and just like sorting out, like, what do you do now? Like, how do you separate from this kind of identity built around yourself that you didn't even know you were doing, you know?
And right, right.
But I had pretty good processes in navigating that just naturally, I think. And so I'd sit in these, I mean, I'd just go through therapists. I'd give them all about five sessions.
Yeah.
And after trying five, I, through that same process, it, you know, there was a lot of, like, they would just start writing my information down. Like they were taking notes I'm like, dude, like this is supposed to be the other way.
You're supposed to be the expert in this shit.
Yeah. And then, you know, they were so intrigued with my perception and the way that I worked through things, you know, not that I'm doing it any smarter than anyone else. It was just the thing I was picking up on, right? My way was intriguing to them.
A life lived in integrity with purpose is rare. That's what it comes down to.
I mean, maybe I'm clear. Like I've always had a lane. And so my confusion when it wanders, it's really not too far away. Yeah. I can get like separated pretty, you know, if you're walking like 3 feet apart from someone, but there's a cinder block wall between it.
Yeah.
Really hard to tell.
Yeah.
But you can walk 3 feet away from someone and it's a half wall and it's much, much more visible.
Totally.
Right. And so it's kind of that thing where I'm there, like I'm offline, but not far offline, but it's a pretty dark, I can't really see where I'm heading. So you get that space was rough. But that was mostly just being hurt and not even being able to move. Like I'd never been that hurt where to the point you don't know if you're going to be able to bring it back. I mean, I knew I was, that was my self-talk, you know, the whole time, but yeah, lots of days on the floor and in the garage and just, you know, in tears in my own sort of black corner moving through those times, you know, and it's just trying not to involve the family, try not to have them see that component of your mind. And because they've already gone through it. They're already seeing someone incapable, someone that can't move. That's, you know, my kids are looking at it like, this is the dude that can move. This is the dude that really, he's the one that plays on the tramp with me. He's the one that showed me skateboarding. He's the one that showed me snowboarding, biking. And we do these things as a family. And then why is he just sitting there? And this is kind of like the years of their life too, right? Like 10 to 15. This is the portion of their teenage years where I remember that feeling like it was 20 years long.
Totally.
3 years, you know?
Yeah, man.
There was a lot of things coming in.
Yeah.
And so that hurt. So I just, you know, it was just navigating that stuff. But, but yeah, closest, darkest I've ever been for sure. But I feel like, you know, I don't know, the clearest I've ever been coming out of it.
Right.
Without even like having things fully locked in, you know, I'm right back into, I just left Powder and Woodward, which is where I was the last couple of years. And I'm back to kind of my own thing and just sort of that bet on yourself thing again, and going to keep it in snowboarding and, you know, different kind of goals. And I have these gym goals here where my office is, and a lot of mental, physical rehab happens here. And so that's a lot of my message and a lot of importance to me is just kind of that.
Using your experience to inspire other people to like, hey, you can do this.
And I just keep it local when I can. It's not something I'm going to sell off and go big box with, you know, but it's my community. I can help some snowboarders here that trust and have a good group that are doing it with us. We're giving them results and they're thankful for it. And that to me is like such a reward, you know.
Yeah.
Sage and Zach Hale, for, you know, two of the bigger names of the kids that are in and training consistently. And I get to send those dudes off. Like they just went 2 weeks ago and they won't be coming back in for most of the season, you know, cause they're on now.
Yeah.
But to like be with them all summer and their consistency and them wanting to show up because they're seeing the gains and the wins and the mental just capacity grow. And then to hear Sage, you know, I just recently heard him talk about how on another podcast that this, what was he talking about that on? Oh, he just told us on our own. And it was just cool. He was in a place when he first came in here that he was confused off of the Olympics and just, he was sorting things out, and this just buffed it out and put it in line and gave him the focus that he was looking for. And to hear that like 2 years later, and then to see what he's done in here too.
Yeah,
man. It's like, I'm like, dude, that's a superhero. And like, we were just part of that progression, and that's phenomenal. Like, what an experience.
Support for people that have that drive to actually take it to the, I mean, the level that things are at now is insane.
It's insane. And to think that I'll never do that, but this person comes here for the experience that we're helping create and curate and provide for them, because it puts them in that space. Why ever do we do things for money when you can get a hold of something like that? I mean, maybe people just don't, and that's why, but
yeah,
if you have something like that and can experience it, and then money presents itself and it's one or the other, I don't see how people pick money, dude. I just don't see it. I don't.
I was working on myself with that. Yeah. Because I don't see podcasting being, you know, super lucrative.
Right.
Other people have said, and I know other podcasts make more money, which is fine.
Depends on how you do it though, right?
That's how you, right. So like my fear with the money thing is that as soon as I'm reliant on the money for my bills, et cetera, this changes. I can't come in here with integrity and be like, hey, the reason I'm here is because you're an inspiring snowboarder that is, you know, going to have a great story and we're going to just talk openly about it, right?
Yeah, no, and there's something special about that. You know, I was listening through yours and that's exactly what it came to. Because like I said, I'm fairly new to the podcast thing and getting in those habits of what you're going to listen to and and how you're going to give yourself that time, mm-hmm. which ones. And so I found I only have really four that are in my kind of.
Yeah. Are they all snowboarding or
like it's this one, F and Rad podcast, and then it's Bombhole.
Yeah.
And then it's Joe Rogan, which is really I rarely click there anymore, but there's a lot there that I enjoy.
Yeah. I always give some sort of a disclaimer when I'm talking. I'm like, look, I do not endorse everything this monkey says, but I do like his idea of being curious about life and talking to cool people.
I know. And I love his, you know, kind of his stance on opinions on certain things, but he's also, he lets both sides talk always. So from a podcasting or an interviewer perspective, I think that's a professional trait. So I respect, and he was really, I was like, that's kind of what you, if you want to understand podcasts, it's kind of the one you have to go listen to because it gives you the format at a general perspective and it sort of helps you understand, well, how you are going to listen to a podcast.
Sure.
I mean, at least it did for me. And then the other one is Simon Sinek. I listen to him.
I don't know who that is.
He's just more kind of, I don't even know what he does normally, but he's more motivational. Oh, and Huberman.
Oh yeah, Huberman's good too.
Dope. He's so five. Those are kind of my five, and
that's rad.
But anyway, it's yours. I was impressed with because it's just someone that loves snowboarding, someone that loves talking about like you know to be able to geek out on that kind of the histories and like the history components and actually care about it is pretty cool. I mean,
thanks, man.
I'm into like the history and parts of it, but
yeah,
but I don't really care to go dig for it, but to hear a story told well about part of it, I'm like, then all of a sudden I'm attached to that thing I knew of or part of even more. And so I like getting tuned into that. Yours seems to fill those holes really well.
Oh, thanks, man.
Just because it's rich, right? It goes back far.
Yeah.
You know snowboarding a few years before I started looking at it from from the voice anyway, yeah, from yeah. my knowledge.
Yeah, well, the thing that happened was I started to look back. Mm. It was actually, it was a function of starting the thing, was that if I would have called you 7 years ago, I wouldn't even know how to get a hold of you and be like, hey, I want to do a podcast.
Yeah, right.
You wouldn't have been on the show just because, like, hey, you're going to be my first guest. You're like, I don't know if I want to do that.
Yeah.
But so I was like, well, if I go back a little ways, and then I was like, well, how far back can I go? My very first phone call was to Sherman Poppin, who invented the Snurfer.
That's crazy.
And he called me back. And I was like, oh, this is a good formula, because he's just ready to talk about it. He hasn't talked about it in a long time.
Yeah.
You call Chuck Barfoot, he's like, he just wants to talk about it, because he's like, man, I used to be talking about this all the time.
Oh, nice.
It's 40 years later. Oh, you want to hear some stuff? He's like, you want to hear about Tom Sims? And I'm like, holy shit, this is fascinating.
You found the guarantee to get people.
Well, so down. So it's just like, I heard it through Donna, like Burton was a get rich quick scheme. This wasn't a get rich quick scheme. This was a motivation thing. Mm-hmm. This was like, I wanted to motivate podcasters to make a This American Life about snowboard stories.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, come on, we can do better. And the very first thing that you can do is get a guest list that has Sean Palmer in it.
Yeah.
That has, you know, Keith Wallace.
Absolutely.
That has Mike Jacoby, that have these people that are like out there ready to talk about their life in snowboarding. But there really wasn't much media while they were there. It was just getting built.
Yeah.
So there's not much information about these guys.
Right.
But I mean, I talked to Dave Dowd, who to me was like an iSki photo in the magazines. And he's got this rich life in snowboarding that's like a 20-year career.
Mm.
I'm like, all right, let's talk. Let's hear this. Put some of that out there, because there's people who will listen and get some sort of satisfaction out of knowing a little bit more about this thing we all love, which is snowboarding.
Yeah, it's a rad scroll when you kind of run through your list of people, because it is. It's all over. You'll catch, you know, a pro, and then you'll catch a 10-year-old pro, then you'll catch a 20-year-old pro, then you'll catch the business person, and then Donna. You know, it's like, it's cool. I think that it's spread out, you know, it's covering the gamut. It's covering important people, important stories. That
thanks, man.
It's a time for them to be told, you know, this is our history. And the thing is we have it now. Like, we have a history. So I don't know if there's a actual year that you need to have, you know, produce some sort of thing to get a history.
Sure. Right,
but, you know, right. 40, 50 years in close now, and we've built a history. We have eras. We have generations. You know, we have generational pros. You know, it's pretty rad. We have dads, moms, kids ripping together, competing together.
Yeah.
Like, because there's a contest that has a spot for dad and mom.
Yeah.
And then there's a spot for, you know, the young gun. And you're like, dude, this is insane. We can all of us participate in this.
Yeah.
You know, and I just think that's where we have a history. We're snowboarding, and it's pretty rad. It's nice to talk about it when you want to teach and educate, and it's not always when you're in it.
Yeah,
it's different. It's a different voice.
The generation before you wasn't invited to do that. You know what
they
I mean?
Weren't.
Like, that was super lame, actually, what happened in snowboarding.
Yeah, they weren't.
And that was because I started so early on, as I was getting to those guys like Damien. Damien Sanders was the first one where he kind of wanted out and he couldn't get out because snowboarding was getting so big and he was such a celebrity version of a snowboarder. You know, remember, I don't know if you remember this,
remember.
But yeah. So you remember him winning like the Trans World Raider Pole Awards, and he hadn't even snowboarded for a year.
Yeah.
Like, he was like the most extreme guy, but there was no new stuff. No. And so that whole time he was taking checks feeling like an imposter, which is crazy. Hard.
Yeah. I mean, you come from the underground and rise up in a space that doesn't want this thing to rise up. And then, I mean, maybe he was the only one at the time making the money, but it wasn't. There maybe been a couple of them, but not a lot you could see. And so, I mean, I would imagine that all of a sudden you're banking and you're like, dude, I'm kind of the only one here.
Yeah.
I'm the only one on the snowboard.
Yeah.
Making all this money. How's this a thing? I mean, I don't know him personally, but that would trip me out.
Yeah. Sure. I think there was a feeling of like 1-to-1, like they're paying me to snowboard and I haven't been snowboarding. Like it's a bummer.
Ooh, that's right. A hard one.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. That's a hard one.
But then I think around him, so that's the one story that's completely abnormal. Almost every other one, like Chris Roach, like he's like, hey, how come I'm not getting my check? And I'm misquoting Roach here. He never said that. But the general story is you're too old.
Yeah.
What are you, 23 or something? You know, we got to make room for the young kids.
It's the same sort of thought. My mom told me, and I always remember it. She just said, because I was complaining about taxes one time. And she just said, if you're paying taxes, you're making money. In that light, it's like this. The pioneers never make the money. The pioneers never really see, quote, the success of the thing.
Right.
Because they're in it. They're the ones creating it. Like Roach was creating what, you know, a method looked like. Roach was designing the melon. He was designing back 180 melons. He was designing all these. He was designing style, you know, and he was in that. He was the pioneer of engineering that process with a few others. And that is the soul of snowboarding now. Like if you talk to anyone that's really going to get into it with you, they're going to come around to style. And they were influenced by someone's style. And that just, you can't, that just never gets paid. Really doesn't. It doesn't. Like when that's the thing, you can have stylish people that are, you know, the best in the world and getting paid lots. I'm not saying that. But when that's the thing, you're in a market that doesn't exist.
Because
that's the soul. That's what it's about for you, you know? And then...
Yeah, when you think about those early... Like, so I just was in Colorado, and it brings that memory to, like, the TDK World Pro, the Swatch World Pro. Mm-hmm. Like, those first spotlights of snowboarders, you know, maybe the highlights were on TV, but we would see them in the magazines. Those guys, a lot of them were there on their own dime.
Yeah.
You know, like Quinn Sandville took a bus there.
So rad.
You know what I mean? And then he had to rent a board because his board got stolen on the way.
Oh, man.
And none of the team would get, you know, lend him one of their boards. It's like those guys, that whole bunch of them were there holding onto their receipts for the entry fee. Can I get a receipt for the entry fee? Because I'm going to try and bill this back to some... You know, guy who's building snowboards in his garage, who's also trying to hold those guys off from, well, don't go to every contest. You know what I mean? But if you go, make sure you win.
Yeah.
Because I could pay your $50 entry
fee. How do I support this?
Out of my, you know, savings or whatever. You know, it's a bunch of people who were struggling and the money wasn't there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the content that was created was pure and genuine, and the personalities that came out of it. Palmer wasn't doing what Palmer was doing. You know, it wasn't fake. He was really that guy.
Yeah, he was really that guy.
You know?
Yeah, and that mattered, and that's really what snowboarding is. So to remind that and teach that, I think is sick, just to say, hey, we started like this.
Yeah.
And it was really from nothing. And it was from just, nothing.
Passion.
Just passion.
Yeah, that's
yeah,
it.
That's
just
it.
Passion. Yeah.
And I think that's just insanely beautiful.
Yeah. And I think that's where the support came from for, you know, the GoFundMe.
Oh, absolutely.
Was that you guys lived with passion And there's a bunch of other people that resonate with that. And they just said, you know what? This is the right thing to do. And it's the, not even the right thing to do. This is just something I want to do.
This is just what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And that, what a powerful message it is. It is something to, yeah. I mean, I have my ways of reminding myself of that constantly because it's important that I don't know, man.
When we talked about it when we first came in and I remembered that I sent the money, I was like, oh, shit, that, like, I just forgot. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like something that I think about all the time.
Yeah.
It's
I've heard that a few times. Yeah. And again, anytime I'm on a mic or something, I like to say just if you did and I'm in front of you.
Yeah.
Please let me know. Cause it's not a, hey, I did this for you. For me, it's an opportunity to say thank you face to face. Cause I can say it here. I don't know who will hear it, who won't.
Right, right, right.
But man, face to face, if you were a part of that in any way and a part of anything, like if you looked to me for snowboarding in any way and you see me around, like if I'm just walking and just come say what's up and ask, you know, cause I want to know. I want to know what you think. I want to know.
Well, for me, my donation to it was, or contribution to it was a genuine thank you to you. Like, thanks for living your life that way.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, that's 100% what it was. It's like, holy shit, thanks for putting your neck on the line.
And you know, snowboarding is selfish, so it's hard to get those thank yous because you're like, dude, I was really just wanting to bust that back lip. I'll be honest. Like,
yeah.
I just wanted that feeling, but I get it. You know, it's, we've put a lot into this and we've showed up. And
for showing up, because like you said, with the mouse, or sorry, not mouse, but Whitey thing, like, you don't know what the formula is right now.
Right.
You don't know what your job is. You're like, oh, our job is going to be wait for these assholes. Like, no, we're snowboarding.
And then you learn to like program that into the outline. It's like, okay, you wait. Yeah. This is, there's some waiting here. That's what that looks like. And then you learn the job but walk the line carefully and pay attention to why you're in it. If you get these opportunities and create these opportunities for yourself, cause it's a lot of it now. You kind of gotta create it. You gotta move your way into it. It's less of a someone found you
right
nowadays.
Well, seems I know a few of the younger pros and some that listen to the show. And so your words are going to reach these guys and they do, like, that's what you're doing with your job. But it's like, I think it's important for the younger pros to have people to look up to that have given back to the community the whole way through.
Yeah. I think so too. Yeah. And they'll learn to be better pros.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like the skate park mentality. You know, there's something so special about a skate park that there could be a kid that comes with a Walmart board still in the plastic. And Alex Chalmers can be like, dude, you need to take all this plastic off.
Right.
He's peeling the plastic off this kid's board and helping this kid just roll around for the very first time. That's, you're not getting that at a basketball court.
No,
you're not getting that, you know, even on a, at a, well, you might get it in a half pipe or in a park or something on a mountain.
Maybe. Yeah.
But the skate park is a really, really, like, it's the beating heart of the skateboard industry. But it's actually got like a wall around it. You couldn't just show up at the skate park with your stuff and start selling shit.
Yeah, no, that's that whole thing is a mystery, and it's a thing that you can only navigate by your personality and your kind of efforts there. And
yeah,
it really can't be described. It's, you just got to enter the space and you'll know if it's for you or not.
Yeah. And it's rad. Yeah. When you see it functioning, you're like, wow, this little community like really works.
It's the best. It is actually my outline for everything I do. If I can just go back and think skateboarding and just say, okay, what would I do as a skateboarder? When that mentality that I hooked into, when I decided I'm a skateboarder, it was that perception of what that was mine. It wasn't like, I mean, being a skateboarder doesn't have a formula, but to me, it was having a skateboard, figuring out how to get it to jump off of the ground, like the person I saw doing it.
Yeah.
And then wearing the clothes that I saw that person doing it. And then I was a skateboarder. Yeah. And that process has just evolved. But all of a sudden I had a task in front of me.
Yeah.
Figure out how to get that skateboard. Figure out how to get those clothes.
Yeah.
And figure out how to jump it off the ground. Yeah, man. And no one to teach me.
Right.
You know, I could say to my mom, I want those shorts.
Yeah.
And so I could get pretty close on the clothing pretty quick.
Yeah.
Skateboard, no money for something like that. So I had to wait, give it time. So you learn this patience process, you know?
Yeah.
And then the commitment process to the thing. How do I get it to jump now that I've got it? Okay, what does this look like? No one to watch still. I haven't seen videos or learned those exist.
Wow.
And you work through the progress of like, but I saw this one dude and I know it came off the ground.
Yeah.
And I know it was still on his feet.
Yeah.
And he didn't grab the thing.
Yeah.
How did this happen? So you go into that workshop and figure it out. And that's my process. Every video part I filmed was those same three steps. And
yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Any business thing I go into, it's the same things. It's just
interesting. That's super sick.
Think that through, like break it down.
Yeah,
Kern's
really pointed out how the, like, we talked about a few years ago about the word poser, you know, and how much weight that held, you know, like
so much crazy.
Like if someone was to call you a poser, was this such an insult at such a soul level, like of who you were?
Oh,
because
yeah,
you hurt. Knew if you were being a poser too, right? Like you knew if you were saying you could do a trick that you couldn't do.
Yeah.
You
or knew. Some signs of like scuffing your shoes up on the belt sander instead
dude.
Of, you know, you're like, really? Do I have that? Dude, I don't do that. How am I like, what is it? What's yeah. giving me yeah. away that yeah, I'm yeah, a poser?
Yeah, yeah. yeah. The scrape marks on the bottom of a board
for sure.
that people think like,
that's a screwdriver, homie.
No, it's not. It was a sharp ledge, bro. That's true.
It was rough. It
that's
was rough.
That's real deal. Like I remember seeing those people doing that stuff and being like, okay, how do I avoid the kiss of death of being called a poser? Well, there's only one thing. That was a formula for me was do it.
Do it.
Yep. Do it.
That's the thing.
Just go and do it. And I think that's still where I'm at now, even though now I'm starting to feel like a poser. I just went to Colorado and like just posed around.
You just, you got to take
no
the beat
snow
down.
There. There's no snow there. So like,
You can't do it if there's no snow.
Yeah. And I don't know what the snow situation is here. I came in here kind of poserish. Like looks like it's going to snow at some point.
Yeah. We might get some snow this week. Dry right now, but I think Thursday's looking good.
Maybe. How's the season been?
We had a fun early season up at the spot, our little rail zone, and we got dumped on early November, a lot of snow.
Yeah.
And our zone holds snow, so we just would farm it in. Got quite a few good sessions. I mean, I've probably been 15 times up there, but just hiking. And
Yeah, you haven't been on a chairlift yet?
No, there's, you know, therapy component to the hike in and then the kind of process of that stuff's important. Always been important for me to start my season kind of in that headspace. And so I still kind of roll through the motions, even though it's not video part based anymore. It's just,
we should talk about who you're riding for. Who do you still have on the program at this
point? Nitro L1. Those are kind of, that's my, I guess hard goods, you know?
Yeah.
And they're great. They've been just supportive of me, give me the boards. And this year I'm riding a little bit more. So we'll try and get a little more footage and do some more stuff like that. And then, you know, the brands that help me out are Bubs, Collagen, that helped my bones get back together, you know. And
dope.
There's been a couple people have just been kind of with me the whole time. And, you know, not even financially, just always hooking it up, making it happen and taking care, you know. So... But yeah, Nitro and L1, they actually pay a little bit of money and
sweet
and give me product when I want, which is dope.
Yeah, Nitro's had a crazy long history. Quinn Sandville was on Nitro, man. He was designing boards Nitro way back in the day. Oh yeah,
I have his clip in the pipe in my head playing since he said that.
And, yeah,
and I can't think of the board. I want to say he was on that. He was on K2 then.
I don't know.
With like a string or surfboard type of graphic in that video, but I can't remember.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he has these board bags of... He rode like the Nitro Diablo. It was like a 186.
The Diablo.
Yeah, through these like...
That's what it was. Yeah. It had that string.
Yeah. That's the one you're talking about. Yeah, it has... Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Sick.
Yeah. He was ahead of his time. He's talking about getting, you know, like...
Dig up a little more on him.
Yeah, he said everybody at... he got everybody at the U.S. Open chanting, fuck the judges, fuck the judges, fuck the judges. Yeah, because he did his whole run switch and felt that he should have got better than fourth, I think he said.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's rad. Snowboarding's rad.
Snowboarding's rad. Punk rock. Yeah, and there's certain guys like Quinn that are just, you see him and you're like, that's the real deal.
Yeah.
That's the, you know, the through line the whole way through.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're one of those guys. Jeez.
Well, thank you. Thank you. There's a few of them and becoming more and more. I think people are getting more able to stay in their lane and confidently.
Yeah.
We're teaching it more. We're building people up to do that.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. Hey, you young pros out there, you've got a lot of responsibility to this thing that so many people built with so much love and passion. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they're in a phase to accept it and learn it, and they're willing.
Yeah.
At least what I see. I'm really impressed with the new kids these days, like the way they're coming up and, you know, the men and the women that they're just, their voices are, they're just on point.
Speaking of the women, have you watched The Uninvited 3? Does that get into your feed?
I haven't yet. It does. I've been watching all the clips. It's in the feed. I follow it.
Yeah.
And I'm fans because as the streets, dude, I gotta like, I back the streets and that's like, I don't really know any of them well, but I think it's amazing.
Dude, it's a beautiful thing. It's all style.
It is.
Yeah, it's super inspiring.
I pace myself on my movies. I'm super, my mind has to be right to absorb them the way I want. And
yeah,
that is one that I want to appreciate. Sexton's video part was the most recent that I just visited. And he just put out a really good one. And same thing. It took me, you know, 4 days to kind of get my head right to go watch it. And it's only a 4 minute edit, but
isn't that insane? Right?
I just want to give him, I want to give him the attention he deserves for putting that thing is together and putting in that time. And I know what it takes and I know his quality control internally on his stuff. And so it's cool to see what he puts out and decides is good enough for his part, you know? And so, yeah, that was that. My next one, I think, will be probably the Jake movie. I think I'm almost prepped to see that.
Get ready to cry.
I Am Rider. Is that what it's called?
Dear Rider. Yeah. There's a lot of stuff in there that's really personal, that's surprising, and just like, holy shit. Yeah, I cried a bunch during that one.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it's been a real emotional kind of video season this year. There's a lot of really intense, you know, Learning to Drown is Jess Kamira's one.
Mm,
Spencer O'Brien's.
Oh, yeah.
Spencer O'Brien's is also amazing, and it's Precious Leader Woman. Like, there's so many.
I didn't hear about that.
Oh, yeah, that one's good. That one's really good.
What was the name of that?
Precious Leader Woman. I didn't realize how good of a snowboarder she was. Holy shit, she's insane.
Good. Yeah, she's been good, too.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And then, Precious Leader Woman. Marie-France Roy did Mind Over Mountain.
Oh, yeah, I just saw the
trailer for it, or then like
Insta. Yeah, they just did an Insta post today, maybe of that, or yesterday or something.
I went to the world premiere, and it was in Vancouver, and the people who were in it hadn't seen it yet. So that's just
amazing.
Like a, it's like
that's
a
classic
one.
Premiere.
Yeah. That's a that's, oh yeah,
that's how that should go down.
Yeah, while I have you here, holy shit, what was the craziest premiere story you got?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I probably won't share my craziest one because that was involving more than just myself, and so for the sake of protecting the innocent, I guess.
Yeah, dude. Or the guilty.
Or the guilty. Yeah, rather. The guilty. Yeah, I mean, honestly, some of the Burton, I mean, Forum was nuts. It was just a different kind of exposure. But then those early days when I was in Forum, I would say 03 to 09, in some of those days, it was crazy. We would go to Japan, and I've never seen a sea of people move like that for a couple of snowboarders standing there to sign autographs. And I mean, old men crying in tears, like,
jeez,
offering you their babies.
No,
their
come
wives.
On. No.
Oh, straight up.
What?
Dude. And I don't know what it means when someone offers you their baby. Is it like, I know it's certainly different than when someone offers you their wife, for sure. But I'm just like, no, it's cool. You can keep your baby. Nope. Wife's, it's cool. She's all yours. Let's just keep it.
That's just incredible.
And like crying on knees, you know, and just like, and that was a crazy imposter syndrome.
Yeah. What does that even mean? I can't wrap my head around that.
And then, you know, in Japan,
and in
Korea, that was the crazy. We went there. I'd never been. We did one trip there. Japan had just started to kind of get used to us showing up. So that intensity started to back off. We go to Korea, we roll up, and it's like blacked out cars out there of the glass. And we walk out of the glass of the customs, and it's like paparazzi, dude. The place lights up with flashes, and I'm thinking someone's behind us, right? Yeah. But it's just like me. Who is that? Me, Mods, probably DCP, you know, some of the Zanink guys, Solberg most likely.
And, yeah.
Sean was at that one, and they were shooting photos of us. It was crazy. And I'm like, this is for us. And then these Koreans in black suits, big Koreans, which is strange anyway. There's not very many huge Koreans.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're security guard, American security guard, huge, right? Probably Canadian security guard, huge as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And, we each had our own. So there was, and those dudes would follow us around everywhere we went, and they would pull us through the parties because people would mob us. And we were in this 5-star hotel that was like gold plated everywhere.
Jeez.
Just treated like royalty. And it was just different. I mean, it's like, wow, we'll suck this up because this ends in a week as soon as I get home to reality, where you're just like,
you're a regular guy, dude, going down the street.
Yeah, we're in the middle of, you know, some alley in Minnesota filming without permission in the dumpsters, you know.
yeah.
So it's just different.
Then the security guard comes and it's a completely different deal. He's like, get the fuck out of here. Like,
yo, beat it, dude.
Yeah, what are you doing?
And you're like, yo, man, I just had people crying at my feet. Yeah, who are you, some 18-year-old guy trying to, you don't care about your job.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, who are you to tell me to leave? I know it was.
Oh, that's amazing.
Quite a contrast. But those early years were crazy. And the European tours were always nuts. And, you know, but really, it's not that nuts. It's just, it's like an overload of passion at every one of those things. That's really what it is. It seems chaotic. It seems like, you know, mistakes are being made and people are being dumb and, you know, not smart on their actions, but it's passion. It's just people juiced up on like the experience that's happening. Bunch of pros, bunch of like people stoked about it.
Yeah, man.
The pros are being cool. Like the people are like, what? They'll talk to me. This is what? They're just like us. This is insane. And it pops and things go down. But
I can't imagine how do I go back to my life if I came up to you with my wife? I'm thinking my wife now. And let's say we had a baby and I'm like offering you the baby.
I know.
And saying, you can have my wife.
Yeah.
Like the rest of my life is ruined. I just ruined my entire thing.
I mean, I wrote it up to some, I'm like, maybe there's some cultural thing here that I'm missing.
Yeah.
But I just got to assume it's something like that, you know, because I mean, that's crazy.
That guy would, that would have been a hard car ride home.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Sign my face, shine my forehead. No, sorry, I don't sign bodies, boy or girl or kid.
Yeah.
Sign my baby. Sign my baby's face.
Have you signed jackets? I went up to guys.
Jackets.
Yeah, Mount Hood. That's, see, I've always been this guy. Went to Hood in 90 and got collected a whole bunch of signatures on my jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sick.
And then went home, gave it to the local snowboard shop because I'm also a bit of an egomaniac. Like, hey, you probably want to put my cool ass jacket up in your shop.
I'm all signed up. That's funny. Yeah, no, I would, I would get like all those guys I would be on tour with. I'd always get a poster with all their cigs.
That's
on
a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
It's like a time stamp and like a memory. Like, hey, I was here with all these dudes.
Yeah, that's all it was. It's just like, this was fun. And then you remember those kind of, that banter at those signing tables. And
yeah,
some are 3 hours long and some are 6 hours long. Some were, you know, 30 minutes.
But yeah.
It was just cool. Different experience.
Is that, was that torturous sometimes and sometimes fun, or was just fun?
It's all fun. I mean, we would give, you know, we'd get that kind of jaded tone here and there and just be like, oh, really, we got to do this. But I mean, all in all, it was great, like visiting with those people and hearing that, like, because that, like I said, we discussed before, you're in it.
Yeah.
But this is an opportunity if you can kind of open it up. You kind of wrapped up your part, focus is kind of stewed down a little bit, and someone's telling you, hey, man, I enjoyed your video part last year. Stoked to see this one. And that's nice. It's cool. It was always nice and refreshing. And reassuring to know that people were paying attention and still moving the needle, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So. I remember very early on Devin Walsh coming into the shop and having coming off I don't even know what part, I don't know when this was, but he basically was like, fuck, this job is hard, man.
Yeah.
Like last year we had an epic snow season and we traveled around all these places and lots of places had good snow. And you know, this year it's shitting the bed. How am I supposed to make a part that's better than last year's on a snow year where there's just no snow anywhere?
Yeah, it's high stress, not a big window.
Yeah.
If you care about, I mean, the stress really is kind of put on yourself. I mean, the videos want it, sponsors want it for sure, but
right.
In reality, we all loaded ourselves with that on our own. You know, we really did.
That's a huge insight for sure.
And you just put it on however you put it on. Some it was crazy. Some was just, nah, I'm just whatever. I'm cruising.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll get what I get. But that's the job. It's just that's the part that defines the one that's all in and the one that's not.
Yeah.
And they have their role, right? They each have their role if they're still there. And
right.
As long as they play, it works.
Right. Like Craig Kelly, the legend of Craig Kelly, making sure that everybody involved in a photo shoot was taking soul laps.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's that balance you're talking about. Like somebody who knows the game can direct a photographer like, no, shoot this little thing from over here at this angle. And with that in the background, it's probably going to be pretty sick.
Yeah.
To the guy that's like, all right, this is all just being posers if we don't actually go take some legitimate laps right now. If we don't go.
Oh, right.
If we don't.
Get the spins.
Yeah. Like we flew all the way here from America to ride these mountains and we're shooting little tiny, you know, shots over here.
Yeah.
Let's go get some real shit done.
Soul lap, party runs. Yeah. Yep. All those, they're important.
Was there ever a trip where the whole Forum 8 was riding like just for fun, like riding around having fun with a bunch of people? Or
no, not that I remember.
That would have been sick. That's a challenge industry. Because I'm with Jake passing, there was a lot of gatherings of, you know, like tons of the Burton team.
Yeah.
And riding all together. But then, yeah, it's the same thing. It was kind of a crappy, icy day.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it would be like to have the kind of resources and time to get 10 of your friends together for like the best day of your life. You know what I mean?
Oh, man. It's That's I mean, those can happen pretty good up at Baldface, I'd say. There's a price tag to that, but man.
New goal.
Yeah. I will say that's a worth it price tag if you ever want to drop, because that's an experience, and do that with some friends.
Yeah.
Man, that's like that's something else. It's pretty unique.
Yeah. That's full on.
It is. It's cool.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thank you, Jeremy. You. It's been great.
Thanks for having me in here.
Thanks for your time.
It's dope. There's a lot of cool shit on the walls. Board that you broke your legs on?
Yeah, that's the broken board.
That scares me. Just seeing it, I was like,
yeah, I just kind of left it as is. And I do some speaking, and I'll kind of bring that and have that be on the stage. And then got the forum spread up there for Mathis photos. True life here. I like that.
Gorgeous.
Little Trevor Andrew art there on that North Face puffy too. Big fan of Trev, so
yeah, he's dope.
I like it. I like you know, reminding myself I'm a snowboarder. Easy to forget when you're just on the grind sometimes.
Oh, I hear you, man. Totally.
So I'm a boarder and I love it.
Sick, dude. Effin' Rad shoutouts this week to Jeremy Jones and the team of trainers at The Sect, where we recorded this interview. Thanks for turning the music off, guys, and thanks to Jeremy for really bringing it. Shout out to Alex Grandmason, a listener who reached out on Instagram. Always stoked to hear from you guys. Alex is getting some good snow this year up at CMH Monashies. Happy birthday to Crystal from Intuition Liners. She's one of those people that's always helping people out. And her big birthday party on Saturday was a fucking blast. Awesome, you guys. Be sure to come back next week for another episode of the Effin' Rad Snowboard Podcast, presented by Vans and brought to you by SIA Productions.